part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
And welcome to another Reg Iron Rota podcast powered by MGM Northfield Park right here on the Press Play Podcast Network. Shout out to our fantabulous producer, Ty Courts, who's making sure everything we talk about gets out to you in the podcastosphere. Nobody better in the business than Ty. So, Ty, thanks for what you do. And, Michael, we were talking here like, well, let's see. There's nothing really going on with the Browns. Football season is over. Guardians are just starting up. We really can't get into too much as to how they look in Cactus League play. And yeah, the Cavaliers won tonight. They beat Washington to snap a two-game losing streak. But we figured, you know what? Let's go off course a little bit here, right? Let's just go back and think of how many years now, Michael, has it been that you have covered sports in Cleveland? I want to put our two combined career years together to see what that number equals.
In November of 1983, Ken, I was hired as the weekend sports anchor at WEWS TV5 to work with first the iconic Gib Shanley.
Wow.
And then after Gib took off, the equally Cleveland iconic Neville Chandler. So 1983, Ken, and I've been here ever since. So that's 41 years now in Cleveland.
All right. And how about getting a chance to work with those two, Reg? I mean,
it was great.
For me, my mentor was Jeff Sindelar, right? So I was extremely lucky at KNR when I started there, 92, 93, officially on the radio. But I was working in sports for Cablevision since 1986, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, 14 plus 24, it's 38 years. So we've almost got 80 years of covering Cleveland sports.
We old, baby.
Yes, we are old. From the high school level to the college level and, of course, to the professional level. And let's start there with some of the people we've worked with and then get into, Michael, some of the athletes we've covered, some of the coaches and managers we've covered that kind of are our favorites as we look back on it. And I'm just curious, what was it like for you to get the job there and have the Gibber and Nev legends in Cleveland sports, right? As the two guys you're looking up to or you're working with and trying to be colleagues with.
Well, sure. And, you know, it was, I was 28 years old when I got that opportunity to be the weekend sports anchor at Channel 5, as I said. So, you know, I knew all about Gib, and not only as his anchoring strength, being a sports anchor in local TV, and can you remember really ESPN and all the regional national sports networks weren't that big of a thing then,
right?
You know, so at that time, still the local television and radio sportscasters were big time, right, in their respective markets. And Gib and Nev were certainly that. I learned a lot from both of them. And I think the ironic thing, too, is that for, I don't know, Kenny, I think it was 7 years, if not eight, Neville was the weekend sportscaster for Gib at Woo's News, WEWS TV. So, all of that intertwined kind of made things. You know, when I first started, it was like, Gib Shanley is – and I will say this, I thought the world of Gib. Now, again, Kenny, no BS. He didn't stand for no BS. Didn't want to talk a lot. I understand that. Didn't really, you know, care too much about what the 28-year-old sports guy thought about coming into Cleveland. And I understood that. And I appreciated it. So I basically, with Gib, Kenny, and again, please don't – I enjoyed the hell out of the man. Tremendous, outstanding, and vastly underrated, too, as a Cleveland Browns play-by-play man on the radio for so long. But a true Cleveland icon, loved the hell out of him. And yet, of course, you know, it was kind of like, well, you speak to me and talk to me when I tell you to. And then when if I want to have a conversation, yeah, I will. But I got that. I didn't take any umbrage on it, Kenny, or any offense. So, you know, Gibb was tremendous. And then Neville the setting up. But now Neville was a little bit more upbeat and a little bit more new school in that, you know, Neville was going to have fun and, do it the way that he wanted to do it, which I really appreciated and understood about him. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me down through the years, well, which one, Reg? Which one? Well, not, you know, I can't do that because to me, they're both legendary Cleveland sportscasters. And, you know, to me, they both, like I said, they're unique in both of their ways. So I never have to this point in all these years. And I'm not going to now tell you if there was one that I thought was better, like better, what have you. To me, I learned a tremendous amount as a younger guy from both of those legendary Cleveland sportscasters.
And Reg, when you think of those guys, right, the Gibber, and what he did. And then Nev, of course, as a famous Cleveland Browns broadcaster as well. Yeah. Still,
and did the Indians before that, Ken, on the radio. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. But did the Indians before he got brought back to Channel 5 as the number one guy. I was there doing weekends, and Gibb went to Los Angeles to make that step for himself. And then Neff came back as the number one guy and still did the Browns, of course. Well, actually took over for Gibb doing the Browns.
There you go.
That job became available when Gibb went to L.A.
Yeah. So when you think about that, two guys to learn from, right, to help you, whether they were doing it voluntarily or you were just absorbing it from the older guys. Because we're kind of the curmudgeons now and everything, along with Brenda and some of the others, as we're up there in age like that. And the young whippersnappers asking a lot of questions and everything like that. But two great guys to learn from. And that's why I was so lucky, too, to be a part of WKNR in its infancy, right, when it was birthed with Jeff Sindelar, the professor, as one of the main characters on that station at the time. And for whatever reason, he took a liking to me, Michael. He just, I don't know if he liked my no-nonsense approach, because I've been known to, you know, say how I feel and don't give a damn what anybody else thinks about how I feel, right? And he would just, he started asking me to stick around after doing my updates, my 2020 tickers back in the day, where we did three updates an hour. He was, hey, stay. I want to talk to you about something. And so to me, I mean, that's like, you know what that was like? Here's what I equated that to. Do you remember when Johnny Carson would introduce a stand-up comedian? The stand-up comedian would come out. He'd do his 3 to 5 minutes, whatever it was. And Carson would either give him one of these okie dokes, the circle with the three fingers in the air, like, okay, or he'd wave him over. In other words, come sit down. I want to talk to you for a minute or two.
Yeah.
For me, that's what I equated Sindelar asking me to stick around after the 2020 tick or two, because I watched Johnny Carson religiously growing up. My mom let me stay up late to watch it. So for me, that was a Johnny Carson moment.
Sure.
The professor wants me to stay with him here after, and I'm on a timeline, right? I got to go right there, but I didn't give a damn. I'll repeat my story. I didn't care. I got to talk with a professor. And so he gave me that chance. And then we became really good friends, and we were in the fantasy league together and everything. And I still miss him to this day. Would just call him to get his thoughts. This team, they've got no power. How are they going to win a baseball game if they can't hit the damn ball out of the park? You know, so I can just hear that, right? Looking at this baseball team. So for me, he meant so much. Peter Brown gave me some, inroads, as well as did Greg Brenda. But it was Sindelar who was kind of like my mentor. And I owe him so much, you know, to this day, looking back on my time there from 92/93. What did I last? 21 years, I think, at WKNR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I can completely understand that because, I would have the great fortune of that time. I'd get called to fill in.
Right.
Whether it was for Sindelar or our friend, the late Bill Needle, or whomever it was, you know, at the time, and to do a show here and there. So same thing. I really enjoyed Jeff and enjoyed being around him, and just made you laugh all the time. I found that not only enjoyable, but a lot of fun to be in that kind of atmosphere with a enormous personality, right? Enormous personality and talent like Jeff Sindelar.
Yeah, and think about all the guys we got to cross paths with at KNR or work with, right?
Yeah.
Alan Davis helped me out a lot back in the day, and he was doing a lot of Indian stuff back in the day, and I kind of took over, one of his minor league Indian show. Barry Butel quitting to go cover the Buffalo Sabres or whoever it was to allow me to do the 10th inning in 1995 in the midst of that season.
Sure.
You know, that year was a great one and a horrible one for me in the same time, because I get to become a full-time talk show host doing the Indians 10th inning as they're going to the World Series. And my mom passes away in August of that year. And so, you know, the highest of highs, the lowest of lows for me. I'll never forget that year for a number of different reasons, but so many great friends that we've made over the years working in this business, not just at WKNR, but how many years have you been doing MAC basketball and football on TV, Reg?
My first year was 1985, so, I've never not done, Ken, although during my years calling the Cavaliers, I didn't call as many MAC basketball games, but I always found a way to get, four or five, prior to that, I'd call, 20, 25 games a year. But yeah, so with the Mid-American Conference, actually it's been since 1985. And I've at least called a couple games every year.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
What is your most memorable basketball game, whether it's regular season or the MAC tournament, that you've called? Do you have one that stands out, or maybe a couple that stand out that you called for whatever reason? They're just, in your brain, and you'll take it to the grave with you no matter what.
Yeah, well, sure. I've got a few of them, but the one, because of 2006, Miami at the buzzer in the MAC tournament. You're laughing because I'll let you say what's coming up next. But Doug Penno, a name in Miami basketball shooting lore for the Red Hawks, hit about a 37-foot-3 at the buzzer to just shock Keith Dambrot's Akron Zips and prevented them from going to the Mid-American Conference tournament. But the late great Charlie Coles coming over to, we're still on the air because, Panda, it's just complete chaos is going on and pandemonium is raising. And it took about, I think it was 4 minutes, Ken, before the officials, came off the monitor and said, yep, counted. He got it off before the buzzer. But Charlie Coles was one of my favorites, by the way, the late, great Charlie Coles, who coached at Central Michigan and for the Miami Redhawks. And Rhoda, you can do it, because he came over to me and had
Reggae.
Yeah.
Did we win? Did we win, Reggae? Is it over? Did we win,
that's right,
Michael?
Yeah, and he one more. I gotta know, man. I gotta know right now, Reg Eyes. Did we win? Yeah, Charlie, I think you won, buddy. But that memory from Mid-American Conference basketball and college basketball will always stand out. And then there's many, of course, Kenny, with the Cavaliers during my time.
Sure.
With them.
Sure, getting to call LeBron James, being the first one, as he what was that like preparing for LeBron, Michael? Well, as he, we knew he was going to be the number one overall pick. We were waiting for the draft lottery. We saw they got the number one pick. We knew they were going to take him number one. And then he has to come in and live up to the hype out of St. Vincent, St. Mary. And you're the guy that's calling the action.
Yeah. Yeah, I was. Then how about we get a break? Okay. We'll get a break and then we'll come back with that. And we'll stay on time here for Mr. Ty Courts.
Yeah, that sounds good, because I'm curious, you know, for you, how exciting that was and how you prepared for that, because I know how meticulous you are in your preparation for all the games that you do. So we'll hear from Michael on that. We'll come back. I've got some thoughts on some games that stick out that I covered, and I'll just tease it a little bit. His Airness was involved in not one, not two, but three of them. We'll get into that a little bit. And a couple of my favorite coaches that we've covered over the years. That's all coming your way when the R&R podcast continues right here on the Press Play Podcast Network, brought to you by MGM Northfield Park.
What's up, everyone? I'm Holly Wetzel.
And I'm Tyrus Powell.
And we are your hosts of the Orange is Oranger, a Cleveland Browns podcast on the Press Play Podcast Network. We give you all the dog pound coverage that you'll need to get you through the regular season, hopeful postseason, and I'd say offseason, Tyvus, but is there really ever an offseason for this team?
Thankfully for our podcast, Holly, there really never is when it comes to the Cleveland Browns. Don't miss our breakdown of each week's matchup, game recaps, and any and all news out of Berea to feed your Browns appetite. As we know, Holly, dogs gotta eat.
Yes, they do. So hit that subscribe button and never miss an episode of the Orange is Oranger, Cleveland Browns podcast on the Press Play Podcast Network.
Hey, the Roadman, Kenny Rota here for the Rega and Rota podcast. You know this podcast has been going strong now for over 2 years, and we are so thrilled that MGM Northfield Park has been a part of it with us. They've taken the journey with us, and if you've never been to MGM Northfield Park, what are you waiting for? Their doors open at noon for simulcast racing every day. They have live racing Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, and Sunday. Post time is 6 p.m., and on Saturday, March 2nd, the Road to the Derby contest continues. Registration is from noon to 2 p.m. with weekly $500 prizes. And Sunday, March 3rd, the Sunday Handicapping Contest featuring Gulfstream Park comes your way. Registration for that begins at 11 a.m. and they have weekly $900 worth of prizes. Where does all of this happen? At MGM Northfield Park. Free admission, free parking every day at MGM Northfield Park. And tell them Regai and Rota sent you.
Hey, everybody, it's Sam Amico from Cavs on the Break NBA podcast. Be sure to give us a listen for all your Cleveland Cavaliers recaps, analysis, breakdowns, draft talk, free agency. The list goes on and on. Give us a listen, Cavs on the Break NBA podcast.
Hey, gang, the Roadman Kenny Rota here, and I've got an urgent message for you. This portion of the R&R podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. The brand that took your balls to space is now launching them into the ultrasphere and introducing the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, featuring a new cutting-edge design and next-generation dual skin-safe blade heads for different shaves. It's pretty much a spaceship to take your boys downstairs to the next level. Join the 9 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with the brand new the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. And how about this? Get 20% off and free shipping with the code RANDRP3. That's RANDRP3 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off free shipping with that code RANDRP3. Type that in at manscaped.com and you get 20% off and free shipping. Your balls have been through enough. It's time to go ultra with Manscaped.
Looking for new insights on the Cleveland sports scene with a unique side of Cleveland sports history? Then you found the perfect podcast. I'm John Sable.
And I'm Scott Sable, and we're hosts of the Sable Brothers on the Baseline podcast, a podcast about Cleveland sports, but not your typical podcast about the land's sports teams. Join us as we embark on a journey of sharing a unique and historical side of Cleveland sports history with the help of some former Cleveland sports stars and other historical figures.
All right here on the Sable Brothers on the Baseline podcast, part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
And the R&R podcast continues, brought to you by MGM Northfield Park here on the Press Play Podcast Network. And Michael, as we went to break, we were thinking back to the time that LeBron James first came into the NBA, the 03-04 season, you get to call his first game. I believe it was at Sacramento. You get to call a number of his games with some great calls and highlights over the years. But I want to go back to that first season. And what was it like for you knowing that the eyes and ears of Cavalier fans are going to be on him, but your voice is going to be behind it on the TV?
Yeah, Kenny, you know, I really didn't think of it in that regard, but what I did think of it is from LeBron's perspective, in that this kid's 18 years old, and I know he's phenomenal and has absolutely just maybe even put a mark on the high school game, certainly in the state of Ohio, but I'm going to say nationally coming into this. So, you know, my first thoughts and questions to him, talked, and I'd known him, of course, from calling a couple of his tournament games with St. Vincent St. Mary. So, and my relationship with Keith Dambrot, too, got me some time with LeBron. So, right. You know, and my hey, young fella, I mean, this has got to be, do you feel any, you know, pressure? Do you feel any sense of, hey, can I get this done? And Kenny, I just always, he would look me in the eye 100% and say, absolutely not. I know what I'm capable of, and I'm going to start showing everybody what I'm capable of. I don't go in and expect to turn the NBA into LeBron's world, but he said, I'm confident as can be, and I'm going to make those opponents understand that this is a different Cavalier squad now because I'm going to make it such. And I thought, wow, that, you know, this kid is unflappable. I mean, this kid is just brimming with, and I didn't look at it at all, Ken, as, you know, an arrogance or a bravado. This kid knew he was here to turn this Cavaliers organization around. Just so happened he grew up in Northeast Ohio. But then, Ken, he did exactly that, right? I mean, I know the first couple of years there weren't playoffs involved, but, you know, still right away they went into winning 15 to 18 more games per season than they had prior to him. So that's what impressed me the most, I think, about him. And I wanted to express that and let people know that I've never been around a young player like this that accepts, understands the challenges and the pressure, if you will, but he's not going to succumb to it at all. And he didn't.
Reg, that opening night, I looked it up, October 29th, 2003, on the road at Sacramento. Mm-hmm. I remember our guy, we sent Ken Silverstein, high rise.
Wow.
At KNR to cover that one because it was the debut of the chosen one, of the king, LeBron James, 18 years old, 25 points, 9 assists, 6 rebounds in a 106-92 loss to the Kings. And I think it was a baseline jumper in which he scored his first 2 points, Michael.
That's right.
Guy.
That's right.
You got to call it. And here we are on February 25th, 2024, and he's closing in, Michael, on 40,000 career points, the all-time leading scorer in NBA history, a four-time league MVP, a four-time world champion. Talk about, you know, handling the expectations, exceeding the expectations, and still going strong at almost 40 years old. This is one of the greatest sports stories in my lifetime.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Incredible. And, you know, you can go back and forth, so it won't do it. You know, half the people think LeBron's the greatest NBA player ever. There's a big Michael Jordan, audience for that as well. I get it. And, the thing is how he handled that at 18 years of age, understood the eyes of the entire sporting world were on him. And Kenny, I might add too, a great deal of folks were hoping, wanted to see him fail and go down. You know that. It's that way with every athlete that has that type of presence and that type of ability in every sport. And he really had it. And there were so many naysayers that wanted him to go down. Hell, even those that covered the NBA, as I, you know, found out during that first year. A lot of them just, you know, whether it was they just didn't want anybody to be close to Michael Jordan or not, or just flat out didn't want to see him have success. There were many of those which I found sad, but, you know, I just know I certainly would never do that, never did that. I mean, there, my first few years, Kenny, Allen Iverson absolutely killed the Cleveland Cavaliers. Killed them multiple times. 45, 55, 56 points. Kenny, I thought, wow, how incredible is this? Got a young guy like this that is having an opportunity to show how great he is in the NBA. And so, you know, to me, hey, man, I applaud that. I applaud guys that can come in with all kinds of pressure and get it done, like LeBron James did, like Allen Iverson did, just to name a couple.
Reg, here's the funny thing about LeBron, and I laugh about this internally a lot, because you know, after covering him for so many years, there was that game in the playoffs after the Celtics, you know, beat him and shut him down. I think he had 14 points or something like that, right?
Yep.
And I, you know, he kind of just gave a real short answer as to, I didn't play well. Well, my job, who, what, when, where, why, and how as a reporter, why didn't you play well? What was it? Did they do something different on defense? Were you hurt? Well, were you sick? When we come to find out after the fact, he had the flu, right? Wasn't feeling well that night, but he didn't want anybody to know that. And, you know, why are you only asking me negative questions, Rhoda? He thinks that that's all I did. Well, when his career start, it was the complete flip side of that. People were calling me the LeBron lover, the jock sniffer. Oh, you're talking this guy up like he's the second coming of Michael Jordan. Well, guess what?
Yeah.
It turned out that he either is or is pretty close to that. And I just said he's going to win Cleveland a championship. Now, when he left, I had my doubts, and the way he left pissed me off and a lot of people, and deservedly so. He had the right to leave as a free agent, no question. But it's how he left that, you know, put you know, everybody in that hate mode and burning his jerseys and everything like that. But then he comes back with the Sports Illustrated post and everything like that, and he does lead them to a championship. And he has four of them, one in Cleveland, one in L.A., two in Miami, and he has lived up to the hype and exceeded it. But I just find it amusing that just because they remember a couple of the negative things as opposed to tuning out all the positive things you said about him for all the years. And I give Charles Barkley so much credit because Charles is one of the few players who now is a broadcaster that comes out and says, look, if you expect the media to hype you up when you play well, you better be able to take it when they question you or tear you down when you deserve to be torn down. And
absolutely,
Charles, I give him credit for that. I really do.
100%.
And some guys want to, LeBron is a control freak. He wants to control the narrative of everything he does. He's a billionaire, so I get it. It's his way or the highway, and how you can't argue with what he's accomplished on the court and off the court. But, you know, there are a few of us out there still in the world of journalism, if that still exists, that, you know, want to do the old nuts and bolts of who, what, where, when, why, and how of a game, of a story. And I'm not going to change. I've been doing it now for almost 40 years in the business, and somebody calling me out, even if he is the greatest basketball player in the world, is not going to change me.
Oh, here, as you should. And that's what has made you successful, and that's what has made you gain the respect and admiration you have. So, no, you don't change for that. And, you know, Ken, in calling all the games I have on NBA, Major League Baseball, college football and basketball, the NFL, look, I'm going to tell you what happened that particular day. And you know what? You just said it. I won't belabor it. But if a guy in a team is not playing well, you know, and again, I'm doing TV 90% of the times where fans are watching it. So if I go on some kind of charade about trying to stick up for people or make excuses for them, well, then what kind of credibility do I have?
Right.
So I've never started doing it. And, you know, that's the way it is. And if guys respect you, I think they understand. There's a difference. You don't have to kill people, Ken.
Right.
But there's a difference in being able to say exactly what their failures were this particular night as a team and individually. And there's nothing wrong with that. We have to, or we're not doing our job.
Reg, the one thing I loved about Mike Hargrove, when I got my chance to do the 10th inning in 95, 96, 97, those 3 years, he takes him to the World Series, two out of the three. They come up short, heartbreaking game seven. We all know the stories, right? The one thing that I loved about Hargrove was he called me in his office one time, and he said, "Hey, Kenny, I heard your show the other night. This was inaccurate." And I said, "Oh, okay, Mike, what did I miss?" And he explained it. But then he said, "Here's what I do appreciate about you. You have opinions that are yours, and I may not agree with all of it, or you may have some information that maybe isn't 100% correct because you don't know what happened behind closed doors, but the fact that you come to every game or in the locker room talking to the players that you may be questioning all the time, talking to me, the manager, that you may have an opinion that you didn't like my pitching change or something like that, I respect the fact that you show up in the locker room and aren't afraid to show your face when you're maybe questioning some of the players or myself."
That's exactly right. Exactly right. I mean, and when you get that, you know that it should make you feel good. Yeah. Because when players and managers and coaches would talk to me and say a lot of the same things that you just expressed, I knew that, okay, they respect me. And they respect the job I'm doing and how I present them on a daily basis. And, Ken, that's all you can ask for. Just call a game, report the game, do the interview the way you see it, ask the questions you see fit with, and 9 times out of 10, you'll find out that people will respect that from you, and they'll answer the questions, even the tough ones.
I had a great relationship with Danny Ferry when he was the Cavaliers general manager. And I think some of that was cultivated when I covered him as a member of the Cavaliers. That was, we ran into Bob Price the other day when we were at Whitey's doing Cavs All-Star podcast with Sam Amico, right? Cavs on the Break podcast. Go check that out here on the Press Play Podcast Network with Chase Smith as well. And, Bingo, as everybody knows him, gave me my first break. Coming out of college, working for local public access cable vision, allowing me to come and interview Cavs players out at the old Richfield Coliseum to play at the halftime of our high school game that we would do. So we'd do a high school game, and then our high school halftime feature would be a Cavs player. And so I kind of built a rapport with Danny Ferry back then. And when Danny became the general manager, we had a great relationship. And again, I'm not pulling any punches. I'm not right all the time. And when I was wrong, he had my phone number, and he'd call me, and he'd tell me when I was wrong.
Sure.
But he'd tell me why I was wrong. Why, if I was questioning something, a move they made, or, the rotation or something like that. So, again, when you have that give and take, it helps you as a broadcaster because you know that there's some respect, as well as you're on the right path of what you're doing and how you're going about doing it. And so I always appreciated that about Mike and Danny Ferry both allowing me to be me, tell me when I'm full of shit, and also giving me a pat on the back, you got that one right. We missed on that one. That was a bad draft pick, or that was a bad pitching change, or, whatever that was.
And to me, the good ones, they will tell you when either the decisions they made or some of the thoughts that they had to make those just were wrong. We're wrong, and the good ones will tell you that. And I want to mention, too, because you did my time with Mike Fratello. With the Cavaliers, my first 8 years were Mike's head coaching years here with the Cavaliers. And I know it would to Cavalier fans, if you say Mike Fratello, I think probably you'd get a mixed bag. Right, Ken? But to me, I will tell you, with him every day, at every practice, at every shoot around, on every road, every game, you name it, his preparation, absolutely phenomenal, as meticulous as you would ever want to imagine as a head coach. And see, that's the Mike I saw every day. He took heat for evaluating his team, to me, properly. Yeah, well Fratello wants to win games 76-74. Well, yeah.
That was me. That was me saying that.
Yeah, well, okay, I got it. I understand it. It wasn't the NBA way, but who the hell are you going to give the basketball to go get you 30-35 every night? I mean, that team consisted of the late Bobby Phils, who I admired and absolutely adored for how hard he played, Chris Mills, Terrell Brandon, Michael Cage, and my guy, Dan Marley. Those were the top five players on his team. And that's Marley after he had the big run in Phoenix.
Right.
You know, Marley kind of, I'm not going to say on the way down, but certainly no longer the Thunder Dan guy that is going to make you go ooh and ah. So, and so, Kenny, he went over 500 with that team. Yeah. Yep. In the NBA. So I know you didn't like the style of play, most of you, but I will tell you, no one prepared harder and got after his players and got into it with them than Mike Fratello. He put, this is the way we're going to play. And damn it, Kenny, they went 42-40. I'm not, of course, I'm not an NBA championship, not a world beater, but everybody had him as a 15-win team. So, I mean, I got a lot of respect for that.
He squeezed the most out of him, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, he definitely did.
Yeah, he did. And, Reg, a couple of guys, you know, that we had fun covering, right? And you were there with him. John Lucas, still in the NBA to this day, right?
Yeah.
And what people don't realize maybe about John Lucas was in college, he was nasty, man. At Maryland, he was a two-sport star in basketball and tennis. That's what helped his
All-American
NBA game.
Tennis player and basketball player, both.
His lateral movement with tennis and basketball, phenomenal. And, of course, he went down the wrong path, and he'll tell you all about that. And you can read up on that with drugs and everything, but then gets clean and sober and goes down the right path and becomes a head coach, and not just any head coach, a coach of the Cavaliers. And you called games, and I covered them. And one of the nicest guys you'll find, and one of the most unbelievable voices, right, guys? I talk like this all the time, Roadmans. It's not just from yelling it wrong way, Ricky Davis's. This is just my voice. And I know it's a little raspy, and it may hurt you to do the impression, but that's how I talked. And every time I yelled it, Chris, he heard me loud and clear, right, guys?
You absolutely were there, Coach Luke. I was there, and it's funny tonight we bring, because Carlos Boozer was on NBA TV tonight, and now, you know, he loved Booz because, as he said to me, as I told you many times, Ray guys, Booz is my best damn player. He's the only one I can count, and he was a rookie.
Right,
Mr.
right.
Boozer was a rookie.
Yep.
So, you know, that'll tell you. I mean, it was a thrilling minute ride, but I just enjoyed it. I love Luke so much, and he put a lot into it, Kenny, but, you know, you got to have the horses, buddy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that he was going to be NBA Coach of the Year. Don't get me wrong. But you don't have the horses in every professional sport. I don't care how good of a baseball manager, football, basketball head coach you are. You're not going to win a whole lot.
I felt so bad for him because he was the one who brought LeBron in to scrimmage with NBA players when he was a senior in high school, so the Cavaliers could get an illegal look at him, and they were fined, I think, $150,000, and he never got to go. Ray, guys, that's the one damn regret I didn't get to coach LeBron James's.
Yeah.
I brought him in. I said, he's a player. And he never got to coach him, Michael.
No, he didn't.
And I feel for him to this day that he never got that chance because they brought in your buddy who loved you, right? Paul Silas, to take over and handle LeBron.
Paul and Paul was the guy that was brought in to be the head coach, LeBron's first year, his rookie year. And, you know, listen, Paul was, you know, during his NBA days with the Red Auerbach-led Boston Celtics, man, you know, championships. he felt there's only one way to do it for Paul Silas, and that's, always play hard and be and know your role, you know.
Right.
Now, Silas wasn't a great scorer, but he's supposed to have to rebound and play D and take that open shot.
Yeah.
Oh, tough. One of the toughest, Kenny, of that period in the NBA. So, I mean, yes, I thoroughly enjoyed Paul a lot, but – of course, with that version of the Cavaliers,
yeah.
Again, it just wasn't enough there really to do anything of note with, as in winning.
Right. Michael, don't say what he said, but who did he chase out of the locker room? Paul Silas? What player did he chase out of the locker room one day?
Because
he was pissed at him?
Ira Neubel. Ira Neubel. It started with, I'm standing there. I'll never forget it. We're in Atlanta, and this is before the game. Before the game. Not after it. And all of a sudden, you hear that I'm standing right outside the doors of the locker room. And they smash open, and here comes Ira Neubel sprinting. And all of a sudden, Big Paul is coming. And I will tell you the first three words of it. You hip hop. I'll kill you. Absolutely. 100% truth. And there's, 100 reporters out there and TV cameras. And it's like, oh, my, this isn't going to be good. So, Yeah, that didn't go well. And was that Danny? Yeah, Danny Ferry had to intercede in that as the GM to try to get things. But Ira Neubel, it never really worked for Ira with Paul Silas as the head coach.
No, great story there, Michael. And another guy that we had so much fun covering, and he recently had a health setback, but I saw him tweeting out pound swoosh, was our guy, Charlie Manuel. Yeah. Who took over for Mike Hargrove, demanded, according to the stories, a contract extension, didn't get it, so he doesn't come back. He goes to Philadelphia, leads the how you like me now, Roadman? Leads the Phillies to a World Series championship, and I just had a great relationship with Charlie because he had a way. Some managers, coaches would call you in and say, you're wrong on this, you're right, Charlie had a fun way of questioning you when you voiced your opinion on the radio and he heard about it. And I'll never forget, they're playing at Pittsburgh. CC's pitching. CC gets the bat. Bases are loaded. It's a 3-0 count. And he lets CC swing away on a 3-0 count. And he hits into a double play.
Right.
And I just tore into Charlie on that one, next homestand. Hey, Kenny, was I a good manager tonight? Did I do good? Was I good? Hey, Kenny, CC can hit. He can hit. He's got pizzazz in that bat. That's what he would tell me, right?
Yep.
I just loved, covering Charlie, and I was thrilled for him that he won a World Series in Philadelphia, and we wish Charlie the best of health as he recovers, from that situation. A great guy and a great baseball mind, and you know what, Reg? I'd take him back right now as our hitting instructor.
Yeah.
Give me him right now. No, sorry, Chris Valleca. Sorry, whoever else has been there or is there. Give me Charlie Manuel at whatever age he's at right now as the hitting instructor and teach these young guys how to hit the ball and maybe hit with some power.
Tremendous hitting coach, and I think one of the best that Major League Baseball has ever had. There's been a lot of good ones, but Charlie Manuel is as good a hitting coach as anybody ever.
They used to call me Kansiki over in Japan. That means big chief. You're like, what? He was the shit over in Japan, Michael, when Charlie went over
there.
He was big time over there. So loved covering Charlie and Grover and John Lucas. Paul's great stories. Some of the things that we get to see or we get to do as members of the media that don't always make it in the newscast or back then in the newspaper or now on the intranet, as we like to call it. And Michael, I got to bring up Michael Jordan because one of the things, I don't know if it's a badge of honor or I'm a bad luck charm, the black cat. I was at all three Michael Jordan shots to beat the Cavaliers. 1989, 1993, 2002. Two with the Bulls, one with the Washington Wizards. Yep. And the last one, my son was 10, Cameron. I wanted him to say he could, tell everybody else out there he went and saw Michael Jordan play a game, even if it was at the end of his career. And we were talking about this not too long ago, Cam and I, and we were trying to remember exactly where we were seated. I think we were like near midcourt or just mm-hmm. slightly down towards the basket. And we watched the replay of the final shot, the third shot to beat the Cavaliers when he was with the Wizards. And I forget the Cavalier player who just left Michael Jordan on the inbounds pass to double team somebody else and left Jordan all alone on the left free throw line elbow.
Yes.
And he buried the jumper to help the Wizards beat the Cavaliers and do it for a third time at Richfield Coliseum, Gund Arena at that time.
Yep. I'm trying to remember too. I called that, and you're right. I don't think that wasn't Andre Miller.
No.
Who was it? Yeah, I think it was a two guard. A shooting guard. I hope I can think of it. I can't think of it right now, but you're right. Yeah, and it's supposed to be on Jordan and decided to go double somebody else.
and I remember watching that as it happened live. I'm like, that's the one guy you don't let get the ball. You double team him. And I think who was the former Piston that was on that Wizards team too? Wasn't there a former Piston?
Rip Hamilton.
Rip Hamilton's coming along the baseline. I remember that. Mm-hmm. I'm like, fine. If Rip beats you, Rip beats you. That's fine. But you don't let Michael Jordan beat you in that situation.
No. If you put three or four guys on him, okay. Fine. I mean, make somebody else beat you. Yeah.
Yeah. It unbelievable. But to be there at the time, painful. But looking back on it now, right, you say, hey, yeah, we saw the greatest of all time. How lucky have we been that we can say, Michael, that we've seen two of the greatest to ever play the game of basketball and intertwined with what we do for a living in Cleveland with the Cavaliers and Michael Jordan and LeBron James.
Yeah.
Well, you can debate who's better, but we got to witness both of them in person.
No doubt. And that I don't think many that do this for a living have had that luxury. So that we've been fortunate in that regard. No doubt.
I mean, we really have. When you think back on, and I'll add in Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, because that 82 was my freshman year at Baldwin-Wallace, and about 84 I started, getting passes to go to games and whatnot.
Right, yep.
So, to go see those guys, and another one that sticks out in my mind was an exhibition hockey game between the LA Kings and the Pittsburgh Penguins where Mario Lemieux and Wayne Gretzky skated on the same ice in Richfield, Ohio, and 18,000 people showed up for a meaningless exhibition game, and I got to interview both of those guys on the same night.
That's cool. That game. You'll always remember that, and I had to it for me, the great Cal Ripken.
Wow.
8 years, the last eight, I called the Orioles the last 8 years of his career, so... that's just like sports deity, right? I mean, that's about as good as it gets. And, I got to see him every day. So very, very fortunate in that regard.
All right, Reg, I'm trying to blow up this video of, who it was that, left Michael Jordan all alone. And, it's too grainy.
Is it?
92-91, Cleveland, 7.6 seconds left, and they doubled. They double-teamed Rip Hamilton on the baseline, whoever it was.
Yeah.
And left Jordan all alone, and he hit the shot. Oh, well, whatever. Probably better that we don't mention his name, because I'll spend another 20 minutes going off on him and questioning how he was on an NBA roster at that time. My goodness. Hey, Reg, this was fun.
Taking a
trip down memory lane, looking back on some of the things we've covered, some of the athletes, some of the managers and coaches that we've covered. And we'll do this again. We're going to try and get some big-time guests on for you in the coming months here on the R&R podcast. So we appreciate everybody tuning in and checking us out on the Press Play Podcast Network. And a shout out again to Ty Quartz, our outstanding producer.
Way to go, Ty.
The best in the business, making sure you all get this on a weekly basis out there, wherever you get your podcasts. And please go to the Press Play Podcast Network, subscribe, so you get an update and notifications for when we bring you a new R&R podcast. Reg, we'll do this again next week, all right, bud?
Look forward to it, Roadman. Have a good one.
All right, you too. And thank you again, everybody out there, for tuning in. Your loyalty to Michael and myself over the years, radio, TV, and now in this intranet world of podcasting. We appreciate it more than you know.